I've spent more time in Bethel AME Church in Wilmington, Delaware than I have than most people I know, black or white, have spent in that church. Because that's why I started the civil... No, I'm serious. I started the civil rights movement.
During the 60s, I was, in fact, very concerned about the civil rights movement. I was not an activist. I worked at an all-black swimming pool in the east side of Wilmington, Delaware. I was involved. I was involved in what they were thinking, what they were feeling. I was involved, but I was not out marching. I was not down in Selma. I was not anywhere else.
This troubled planet is a place of the most violent contrasts. Those who receive the rewards are totally separated from those who shoulder the burdens. It is not a wise leadership. Here on Stratus, everything is incomparably beautiful and pleasant. The High Advisor's charming daughter, Droxine, particularly so. The name Droxine seems appropriate for her. I wonder, can she retain such purity and sweetness of mind and be aware of the life of the people on the surface of the planet? There, the harsh life in the mines is instilling the people with a bitter hatred. The young girl who led the attack against us when we beamed down was filled with the violence of desperation. If the lovely Droxine knew of the young miner's misery, I wonder how the knowledge would affect her.
Beer brewed here, it is used to make the brew beer here in this refinery. Oh, Earth Rider, thanks for the Great Lakes. I wonder why it's called.
Good morning, America. How are you? I'm a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory. Rabbi Dave, stop telling me that I'm not good enough to be president of these here United States.
I don't know how I'm going to top that one as just a lowly, humble Friar Rod. I just don't know, Dave.
I don't know either. But I do know that, you know, back in the day when me and Jesse Jackson and John Lewis were marching in Selma, Alabama, back in the 1940s, for civil rights back then. I know that those are the days that I remember well. I'm kidding.
Those are the only days you remember well.
So after last week's discussion, I found myself receiving end of numerous emails and texts and various communications vis-a-vis science fiction television shows.
Okay.
And I don't want to mislead anybody. I do like science fiction. However, it is not where I live. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So I do a lot of reading, obviously, most of it history related. But I read a thing a couple of weeks ago about, psychologically speaking, why we like to re-watch, re-binge shows that we've already seen. And the answer was a little surprising to me. The answer was, the reason we like to do that, as opposed to watching new shows, is because our brains are so overloaded these days. That we find this, it's like comfort food. You know what you're going to get. And so it calms us down.
Okay.
Makes sense?
It makes sense.
It does. But I also object to that because I can now watch a show, and I'm about to give you a couple of examples, that I have watched, that I grew up watching science fiction-wise. Because there was a time in my life when science fiction was the defining thing. Primarily, as you already know, Star Trek.
Yeah.
The original series, because I do not recognize the other series. I certainly don't recognize the modern trash. Don't send me the emails, the phone calls, or Bill the text saying how great it is. Because it's not. And I'm about to explain to you why it's not. But I find myself here in the middle of taking a 130-question exam, midterm exam, needing some background noise.
Mm-hmm.
And so I flipped on the television, and there was Star Trek. Hooray!
Huzzah! The peasants rejoiced.
And so it was comforting my mind, because I knew what was coming. Except, here's the problem. As a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory, I guess maybe I had forgotten things? I don't know.
Well, I'm a firm believer in that I've forgotten more than I'll ever know.
So here I am taking this test, which, by the way, I got a 97 on. So
well, congratulations
to me. Huzzah. Unimportant. I got an even better score on my essay test for U.S. history, but that's another story, too. I kept getting distracted by Star Trek because there were things in the Star Trek episode that I didn't remember before. And I don't mean in the sense of what the actor said, what the line was. I mean, it had changed meanings.
Okay.
Now, I'm a firm believer that Star Trek, the 1966 version, the original series,
TOS, T-O-S,
was so cutting edge that the executives at NBC were terrified of Star Trek. They had no clue what they really had on their hands.
I agree that they were very, because of the political landscape and how edgy it was and the issues that it dealt with.
Mm-hmm. But as a 10-year-old kid in 1972, 1973, watching Star Trek on reruns, which, by the way, in syndication, there are as much as 5 minutes of each show cut out, anywhere between 1 and 5 minutes cut out of them. So if you haven't seen them, you know, in their restored format, you may not know them all. So here are these shows that I'm watching as a kid, and I'm recognizing that there are big, broad themes here that clearly scared NBC. In fact, the original pilot, known as The Cage, which was later reworked into the only two-part episode, The Menagerie, telling the story of Captain Pike, and was so far ahead of its time. A woman second in command.
Yeah.
The themes about mind control, but of course, the implied titillation of the show caused NBC to just absolutely panic. And asked, but it was so good that they thought, so they did something they never do, which is they asked for a second pilot, which is how you got Captain Kirk. Because Jeffrey Hunter was moving on. He didn't want to deal with it. So you end up with you end up with William Shatner as the captain and the Star Trek that we know.
Yeah.
And we go off into the universe and we start examining issues. Now, keep in mind, this was 1966, 1967, 68, and 69.
Summers of Love.
Right. Three seasons over the course of 4 years. During that time, we had an episode in which we dealt with a race that was black on one side and white on the other, while the other race was white on one side and black on the other. Which I know sounds absurd, but it was so in your face in the 1967-68 time frame that you couldn't help but miss the implications of this, which is you're being stupid about this race thing.
Yeah.
And that made television executives nervous because, of course, toxic shows were not it's not a new invention of talk radio in the 1990s and 2000s. And advertisers were a little bit skittish about stuff like that. But the ratings and the fact that people were watching this was so overwhelming. I've spent basically my whole life as a Trekkie. My mother once explained to me that I used to watch Star Trek when I was 3 and 4 years old. I'd be glued to the screen. I have no memory of this. I don't remember seeing Star Trek until the early 70s, 72, 73. Mm-hmm. But I know it's always been there. And so there's this comfort to it when I turn it on because I know it's coming. There's no surprises. There's no...
It's like coming home, Dave. It is.
In a lot of ways. But then I started taking a U.S. history class. One of our assignments for this quarter is to read something that I've known about all my life. I've probably read quotes from, but I never sat down and actually read it. And to be fair, I still have not. Mm-hmm. I did, however, buy the audio version of the book. And whilst I walk, because I still do that, I have listened to the book. Does that count as reading it?
This, I guess, sort of.
This is not a book I was familiar with. This is not something I'm returning to for comfort. And believe me, this book, should you decide to read it or listen to it, will shake you to the core. The name of the book is The Narrative of Frederick Douglass. Everyone knows who Frederick Douglass was. Douglass was an escaped slave. Mm-hmm. Became very popular in the North. He became the focal point of abolitionism. I don't know why I always call it abolition. Because it's abolition. It's just one of those things in my head. It's like Renaissance. So I can't say it right. Anyway.
Renaissance.
So.
Neanderthal.
Well, you're the ones that say that wrong.
No. It goes both ways.
So that's what she said. You're reading this book, and it's stuff that intellectually you know. The closest experience I can give you to this is when I went to Jerusalem. You go to the Yad Vashem Museum, which is the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem. Mm-hmm. Now, I had spent this entire tour being the last person back on the bus. And people, including my now ex-wife, were getting a little frustrated with me for that because they were always waiting on me. In fact, my favorite picture of that entire trip is taken from the top of a aqueduct in Caesarea. Mm-hmm. And you see the bus down there with everybody on it, people leaning out the windows, looking at me up on top of the aqueduct. And you see the tour leader and my ex-wife both sitting there with their arms on their hips and looking at me like, not again. So we get to Yad Vashem, and I made a conscious decision. I said to myself, I already know all this. I'm familiar with the Holocaust. I don't need to see this. And so I thought I would just take a shortcut through Yad Vashem and be the first one back to the bus. Mm-hmm. That's what my conscious thinking was. You will not be surprised to learn that I was the last one to the bus. Because here was this subject that I thought I was familiar with, that I thought I knew, but I got caught in stuff I did not know and had never experienced before. Reading Frederick Douglass's book is the same way. You think you know about slavery. You think you know about the issues that were involved. But I'm telling you right here, right now, unless you've read this book, you probably do not. You probably have no concept of what they were. You have the Django Unchained version of it, if you've seen that, but you don't really grasp a lot of what he experienced and what he went through. And it's altering in a lot of ways. It will change how you view things.
Okay.
Including when you turn on Star Trek as a background noise for a world history midterm exam, which I almost got completely distracted from because I was watching that instead of that and going, wait, I've heard that idea before. And realizing that the people who wrote these Star Trek episodes were absolute geniuses. These were people who were dealing with the very issues, the social, societal issues of the day. And doing it in a way that I'm not even sure the people there then recognized. But the more I watch this stuff, the more it's like, holy crap. So I want to give you two examples.
Okay.
Star Trek episodes. And I know, well, babe, this isn't when, wouldn't this become the science fiction show? This is a show about whatever's on our minds on any given way.
Yeah.
We'll get to the politics stuff next segment. Relax.
And it is always complaints with that.
Right. Always. There's an episode of Star Trek, the original series, which I will not refer to as the original series anymore because it is the only Star Trek there is. Okay. That plus the six movies, that's it. There's an episode called Patterns of Force that is universally reviled. People hate this episode. It always lands in the bottom third. This is colloquially known as the Nazi episode.
Okay.
Where the Nazis have taken over the planet. And
okay, I remember that one.
Everybody does. You got the planet, you got Zeon, and you got Echos, and you got all these ties to the Holocaust. And people go, well, why do they have to do that? Well, they're just Hogan's heroing this in. Except they're not. If you stop and think about this, in 1966, 67, 68, when this aired, we were less than a quarter of a century after the end of World War II. And the vast majority of Americans knew nothing of the Holocaust until 1945, until the end of the war. So really, you're talking less than 20 years in most cases before anybody in America knew anything about the Holocaust. They knew that the Germans were discriminatory against Jews, but as Hitler himself once said, we're not treating them any worse than the Americans do. So there was nothing, this is kind of a controversial thing to say, there really wasn't anything different in the perception of what Americans had that Germans were doing to Jews than they themselves were doing, or had done, particularly to African Americans before. So there was no real outrage about it until they discovered the concentration camps and the ovens. That changed everything. But by 1968, there was a significant Holocaust denial movement in the United States. Most people don't understand this. Most people don't know this. By the late 1960s, there were hundreds of people, popular people, claiming that it never happened.
Yeah, there still is.
So why does Star Trek feel the need to remind everybody that it happened? Except to say, there's a whole lot of this whole idea about it can't happen again because now we're smarter. But the name of the episode is Patterns of Force. And it's a reminder, the whole trope of the episode is that the history professor doesn't learn from history and is doomed to repeat it, which I hate that quote, but it's the whole, it's once again hitting America upside the head with a frying pan going, hey, dumbasses, this did happen. And you need to not forget that, because once you do forget that, then just like this historian who apparently forgot that part, you start going, well, there were some good things about it, and we should, you know, we should take care of those. And we start ignoring the bad. And don't say it doesn't happen again and again. Well into the 1980s, 1989, 90, you had the owner of the Cincinnati Reds, Marge Schott, proclaimed in an interview, Hitler wasn't all that bad. He didn't do everything bad. So in itself, that episode, you might watch that episode, Patterns of Fortune, you might go, well, it's just science fiction, you know. But it really was a lesson. So yesterday, in the middle of my exam, the episode that's on is called The Cloud Minders.
Okay.
Which, until a year ago, if you had asked me the title of that episode, I would have said it was The Cloud Miners. Because it's all about mining. It's all about flying to some other man's sky and mining his planet, right? Except that it's not really about that. But it's actually The Cloud Minders, which makes more sense when you understand the whole episode. And this whole episode, Rod, is about equality of the same race. Humans who, some of whom live in a cloud city and some of whom live down on the planet, and are looked down upon more figuratively as well as literally, from the people in the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're listening to Spock talk about this stuff, and as you're listening to this lesson as it plays out about how Kirk is going to convince them they're all really the same, they just have different viewpoints, as Frederick Douglass once upon a time said, how do you say this? Because I got to say it right, because I keep saying it wrong. The point from which a thing is viewed is of some importance. And that's what Kirk is trying to tell him. But yeah. As you're listening to Spock talk about it, I am literally hearing the words, paraphrasically, not quotes, but the same ideas that Frederick Douglass was putting forward back in 1845 about how can people look at each other this way. And the issue isn't even really slavery. The issue is that it's how does one group of people look at a different group of people, the same race, the same genetic, the same everything, just different in one small way or another,
mm-hmm.
and decide that they're inferior to you. How does that happen? And these are themes that Frederick Douglass explores, and these are the same themes that Spock and Kirk are exploring in the Cloud Minders. And I'm like, holy crap! These people were geniuses writing this stuff in the 1960s, because we're still having the same arguments in the 1960s mm-hmm. about equality of the races. We still have this idea that somehow or another, well, you might be free, but you're not equal. In fact, we had a Supreme Court decision, remember that? Separate mm-hmm. but equal in the sense of service. We had these whole ideas that were just being addressed by Star Trek. And the more episodes I watched now as a 61-year-old man with learning the things that I'm learning now, I'm looking at this entirely different than I did as a 10-year-old kid, which was great. And then yeah. as a 30-year-old man starting to see the societal issues that were involved here, you know, there's a whole episode about the Vietnam War
mm-hmm.
and escalation. There are all these episodes about dealing with these issues, and I'm seeing them much differently now. I'm seeing them as the people who wrote these episodes understood these things. Why don't we?
I'm wondering that, you know, if they were to start today, if the same writers were alive today in Roddenberry, what kind of episodes would they create today?
I don't know specifically what they would create today, but I guarantee you it would be the same kind of addressing of societal issues. Which brings me to my question about all these other Star Treks.
They don't. And all these other science fiction shows.
What science fiction shows are out there doing that today? I loved the original Battlestar Galactica. Trust me, I loved it. But really, what did it address?
I don't think that addressed anything like not that. Not to the same level.
No. Buck Rogers in the 25th century?
Minute.
Beady, beady, bop.
What's up, Buck?
Funky. What shows today are doing that? What shows in general are doing that?
You know, I will say Deep Space Nine did address some of the racial things. There was a strong undercurrent with a lot of the different races that are on Deep Space Nine. And I think that's probably one of the only ones that really got into more of those. Because it wasn't we're exploring and we're looking at new adventures. It was more about life in a space station.
And I will tell you something surprising. Of all the other series that have been on, Deep Space Nine mm-hmm. is the only one that kept my attention for more than 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that's why. Because I was sensing the same kind of approach to things.
Yeah.
We're taking these modern day issues and we're putting them in science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And the same lessons, that patterns of force, these things keep repeating mm-hmm. because we don't learn the lesson. And I tell you, if you want to have an interesting and strange experience, a veritable epiphany, as it were. Go read Frederick Douglass's book. It's not a long book. The audiobook is only 4 hours long, so won't take, if you put it on 1.5, that's what, 2.5 hours to listen to it?
Yeah, something like that.
Something around there. And when you're done with that, go watch that episode, The Cloud Minders. And just take notes. Just in your head, say, okay, wait, that idea comes right out of Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
It comes right out of the abolitionist movement. And it deals, again, more, less with slavery and more with the common idea back then that even if slavery is wrong, that doesn't mean the races should be equal. That was the common belief, even in mm-hmm. the Union.
Yeah.
And that belief was just as mistaken as the others.
Mm-hmm.
But here they are on full display, but most of us aren't noticing it because we're looking at Droxine in that dress going, is that thing going to fall off or not? And hoping. Anyway, that was how my test went. I did get an A. Huzzah.
So where does hardcore Fenton Mudd fit into all of this? I mean,
Bill Mick's least favorite character.
What's the deep philosophical underpinnings of his episodes?
I haven't
really
stopped to think about that yet, but in the first one, Mudd's Women, it's about mm-hmm. believing in yourself. It's about what truly makes someone beautiful.
Okay.
In the second one, it's about never leave your ex-wife at home because they're going to turn her into a robot.
Hardcore!
You've been drinking again.
Anyway, it's actually one of my favorite characters,
so
there you go,
Bill. I love that episode. I love that character. I don't know what Bill's problem with him is.
I have no idea.
Other than he does kind of look like him. Welcome back. I'm Dave.
I am Rod.
And as I said, I am a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory, which is striking home to me right now. Mm-hmm. Really, I'm starting to realize just how much of a well-meaning, sympathetic guy I am.
That was an amazing report, actually.
Wasn't it? Although, I don't know how many people are watching the Sunday shows today, but we are being told left and right that this report is James Comey-esque. This is this guy, what's his name? Her,
mm-hmm.
who by the way happens to be of Asian extraction.
Okay.
So
he's a white guy.
Yeah. We're being told now that this report that he issued, and for those of you who may not have kept up, and I'm sure there's a few of you out there somewhere, the special counsel's report was released about Joe Biden's classified material. Handling.
Mm-hmm.
So the report said he did it, but we're not going to charge him. We don't recommend charges because A, we don't charge sitting presidents. But even if we didn't have that rule, he is, and that's a quote from the document, a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory who would play well in front of a jury, so you probably wouldn't convince him anyway. 388-page report. And today we're being told by the Sunday shows, and I haven't actually watched them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Probably won't, but I've read all the articles about it. We're being told that this is very Comey-esque. Remember Comey
mm-hmm.
came out, Jim Comey came out in, was it August or September? Might have been later. Of the 2016 election and informed us that Hillary Clinton definitely did violate the law.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely mishandled classified information. She had an illegal server in her basement, but who cares?
Well, she didn't mean to.
She didn't mean to. So, and C, that big C on the top of those documents stood for cookies. So
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, I'm sorry, officer. I didn't mean to go 20 miles over the speed limit.
Right.
It just happened.
I'm sorry. But, and this was widely perceived as handing the election to Donald Trump. It didn't.
No.
Because, again, anybody that was going to vote for Hillary Clinton didn't care about that anyway.
Mm-mm.
And anybody that was going to vote against Hillary Clinton already believed this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But we're told,
lock her up.
We're told that Comey destroyed the Clinton campaign by doing this. And so consequently,
he destroyed his credibility is what he did.
Well, now we got this guy, her, who has issued a report, and the Sunday shows are telling us the same thing, that this report is just it's slander.
So in and of itself, right? It wouldn't have been, you know, it would have been bad, but they could have spun it. But then the doddering old guy gets in front of the camera and screws up yet again.
Well, it's kind of where I'm going with this.
Right.
So if I am a sympathetic old man, I got to get the phrasing right. Sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. How do I prove that I'm not that? Do I want to prove that I'm not that?
You go front cameras and you cuss and you screw up the president of Mexico. And Egypt and yeah.
Claim that you had a conversation last week with François Mitterrand.
Mm-hmm.
And so forth and so on. And by the way, don't forget when I was marching in the civil rights movement back in the 1940s with John Lewis and Jesse Jackson.
Well, he's always been prone to exaggeration, even when he had his mind.
Well, see, and that's the problem with Joe Biden. And again, why did he drop out of the 1988 race? Again, anybody? Bueller? Anybody remember?
I don't remember.
Because he got caught red-handed plagiarizing.
Uh-huh.
Which is
the kind of thing that
might get you dismissed as a Harvard professor, but who knows for sure. Joe Biden, reluctantly
dismissed.
Right. Well, not even really dismissed, just sent back to your old job at the same pay rate you have now.
Yeah, because that's how that works.
Right. So all of this is followed up by, of course, the Sunday shows, which are making the rounds today about how this report is outrageous, how it's mean-spirited. This is Donald Trump somehow or another convinced this her guy, who is obviously a racist, to put this sentence in there to cast aspersions on the president's mental state. And consequently, this is just another MAGA attack on Joe Biden.
MAGA.
From the back door. Even though there's absolutely no evidence that Mr. Herr is a Trump supporter in any way, shape, or form. Let's see. What are the facts here? Did Joe Biden have classified documents in his garage and Corvette?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Check. Did he lie about it? Check. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Should he be prosecuted? Well, we don't prosecute sitting presidents. That's the rule. But even if we didn't, do you think you could get a conviction for this?
Now, that makes the most sense, is where he said, bringing him in front of a jury, I don't think we're going to be able to convict. So,
right, because he is a sympathetic, well-meaning, elderly man with a poor memory.
So, which would actually, if he was charged and brought before a jury, it would destroy his career.
Yes, it would. So it's kind of a backhanded, he really is a doddering old fool, without saying you couldn't convict this guy because he doesn't have the cognitive ability to defend himself, which is what he's actually saying, right? That he can't stand trial because he's not mentally competent.
Yeah.
That's what I'm reading in it. Maybe it doesn't say that.
So here's a broader question, because we've been seeing this decline in the public for quite some time with him. But shouldn't it be criminal for the people that are propping him up and using him to keep him in that position? And it almost seems like elder abuse in a way.
Can you prove it?
Well, not without someone on the inside coming out and saying, hey, no, I've witnessed all this, which they won't do until Joe's gone.
Which they won't do. And the flip side of that is, have you ever dealt with one of these people on a personal basis?
No, I haven't.
I mean, they become very vindictive. They become very mean, very argumentative. How dare you, my grandfather? Well, you know, why are you taking my driver's license away from me? Why do you hate me? Why are you abusing me? I'm going to call the police.
Aren't we seeing that with Joe? We're already seeing some of that.
We are, but I'm not qualified to say if it's real or not. My best friend in the Navy, his mother was the secretary to the chairman of the Democrat National Committee. She was the actual secretary, you know, sit in the office and take a... So back in the 80s, I spent a lot of time in... Wasn't a Democrat, folks, don't get me wrong. But I got a lot of access to things because she knew I was interested in politics that maybe normal people wouldn't get. I was backstage at the 1988 debate in Virginia, Williamsburg. It's where I met Bruce Babbitt and Al Gore. So, but I used to go up to Washington, D.C. with him all the time because Washington, D.C. is a great place to go, especially if you're a native over there. Anyway, on one of the trips, his grandmother was there. And everybody in the family kind of warned me to stay away from her because she's really mean and bitchy. So we're at the grocery store for some reason.
I remember this. Right. I think you told this story to us before.
Many times. And I end up stuck with her. She's just laughing. So what's so funny? She says, you know why I like being old? No. Because I can be a total bitch and get away with it. I just started laughing. And from that point on, she and I were simpatico, man. We had a ball. So what if he's faking all this? Just to, because he's curmudgeony and old. I'm curmudgeony and old.
The memory lapses, I don't think he's faking. I think he's trying to pull these things out.
He's always done it. In the 80s, he was lying. He lies every day about what happened to his first wife. He claims that this drunk driver hit her, and that's not what happened. He ruined that man's life. That man ended up committing suicide because Joe Biden wouldn't shut up about him being a drunk driver that killed his wife, which is not what happened. That's not me. That's not my opinion. Go look it up. It's public record. So this guy has always been, I'd call him an actor, but he's not believable. So what is he? And the bigger question to me is...
A failed stand-up comic.
The bigger question to me is, why the hell do people keep voting for
him? That, if we could answer that question...
Seriously, if you're a Biden voter, why? What is this guy's moral character... I know you hate Donald Trump. I get that. I get the argument that, well, he's not Donald Trump. Except that everything you tell me about you hate about Donald Trump is Joe Biden. So why do you keep voting for him?
Wrapped in a D package, right?
Well, he supports progressive agendas. Does he? He asked somewhat sarcastically about the man who pushed the 1990s crime bill. Which basically, if you're listening to the Black Lives Matter people today, tell you that it legalized being African-American. Criminalized it, not illegalized it. That's not a word.
Illegalized.
So this chameleon keeps changing colors to be what you want him to be, even though he's clearly not. But somehow or another, he is a sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory. And that's what we're upset about.
Well, so now that I'm thinking that's the true Joe, because that would have been a closed door discussions, right?
Except that he's a sitting president and we don't charge sitting presidents. Okay, fine. I get it.
Yeah.
But now you got the New York Times coming out this week with two editorials, two of them essentially saying Joe must go. February 9th, the piece titled The Challenges of an Aging President. Which basically just agrees with everything else. Maureen Dowd, Mr. President, ditch the stealth about health. Ross, do that. Is it do that or I don't know. The question is not if Biden should step aside, it's how. The details in Mr. Ho's report will only heighten these concerns, which Mr. Trump's campaign is already exploring. So you got this dichotomy now of people going on the Sunday shows telling us that this report is completely fake. It's false. It's unfair. It's a lie. It's Trumpisms. But then you got the New York Times saying, well, it's basically true and we need to get rid of this guy. Maureen Dowd argues that Jill Biden and his advisors have tried to come up with ways to, quote, obscure signs of sentience, unquote, but none of their tricks have worked. As a result of trying not to come across as a crotchety grandpa, he has in fact shown himself to be a full-blown crotchety grandpa. Despite running against Trump as a bad man is not enough. He needs to acknowledge to himself that his moments of faltering are a big weakness. Now, that's the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
So what are we supposed to make of this? What are we, the average Americans, take from this idea that not only are we being told that the Hur report is accurate but mean and unnecessary, or a complete lie and unnecessary and just a Comey moment, or the New York Times saying that, look, it's time for Joe to go. After he just won a landslide victory. Did you know this? There was a headline. He won a landslide victory in South Carolina in the primary last week. I'm like, who the hell's the editor that wrote this? Because seriously?
Yeah.
Got almost 100% of the vote.
I mean, Kim Jong-un does the same thing. He gets a landslide every time.
Oh, when you're the only guy on the ballot, it makes a big difference. You get 100% of the vote if only two people show up. But the point is, why would you even run that headline?
Because it's a cult. Because the left, there's a lot on the left that is just a cult-like mentality.
So what do we take from this? What's the lesson that we take from this? What's the Star Trekian lesson that we need to take from this whole scenario going forward? As Americans, what do we look out of this? To me, I'll let you go first.
That we need a Logan-esque type of lottery system? No, I think there definitely needs to be some kind of threshold. And I don't know that it necessarily needs to be age, more of a mental acuity type of.
Okay, but how do you do that? Do you have a test?
I think you're going to have probably a panel of professionals that assess.
Why can't the American people assess that? Why can't we sit here as the people and go, well, come on.
Because politics get involved, right?
And you don't think politics would get involved in a panel?
It probably would, but
that panel member was appointed by President Trump. You know he's lying.
I think the smartest thing that Biden's done was bring on Kamala Harris, because that's the fear. People don't want her to be president. So, like, can we just hang on with Joe? Can we just hang on a little bit longer?
Well, conservative pundits have been telling me since 2021, since January 20th of 2021, that Biden's going to resign in 2 years and Harris will be the president anyway.
I do think after the primary, I think he'll probably drop out for health reasons.
How can you do that, though?
I just think he will.
I don't think that at all. I think this guy's going all the way through because he's got things he needs to do, specifically with regards to pardons. And I don't know. To me, the Star Trekian lesson of this is somewhere we the people have failed. And this is something that I say on a fairly regular basis. There are 360 million Americans, plus however many millions have come in because of Biden's, forgetting to close the door. These are the best two people we have to run this country. Even if you expand that and go to the primaries, these are the best 12 people to choose from that we have. This is it. This is what we're being told by the ubiquitous they that's running things, are our choices for who's running this? And we just swallow it, hook, line, and swing, and especially if you're on the left, because you weren't given a choice at all. You were told Joe Biden's in. Even Ronald Reagan had people run against him in the 84 primary.
Mm-hmm.
Because they disagreed with the way he was doing things. Did he shut them down?
No.
He did not. So, I don't know. I wonder if the lesson isn't that we have failed as a people. We have failed, and because we failed as a people.
I think it's a combination of things. It's the people. It's the information that they get. It's groupthink. It's the cultural differences between urban and city stuff. Cause as we've talked about before, the city folk have different priorities and a different mindset about how things need to be run. And it's much easier to get groupthink when you've got people living that close together as to, you know, especially when they're hungry.
Well, here's what I know as a historian. Nothing new under the sun. This has been it since 1791. Been this way. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And we're going to change gears and go in a totally different direction with our WTF news stories this week. Dave, I know that you are a fan of the sea, that you love anything to do with that. And so there's good news, Dave. There's good news. In North Carolina, in a North Carolina aquarium, a stingray is expecting babies.
Stingrays, those are the ones that murdered, what's his name? The crocodile guy?
Steve Irwin. Yeah.
They viciously killed him.
Yeah. Well, he did try to reach out and touch one. So, but anyway, good news. They're expecting babies. The problem is, Dave, that there weren't any male stingrays in that aquarium. So this left the caretakers pondering and wondering what's going on. Well, they are suspecting, Dave, that the Charlotte stingray at the aquarium that was put in the shark lab could give birth any day now, and the pregnancy was a shock not because there wasn't any male stingrays, but there were male sharks in the tank, and they're suspecting that the sharks impregnated the stingray.
Well, sharks and rays are from the same family, right?
And that's what the article says, but there's also the possibility that it actually, what is it called? Parthenogenesis?
Right, immaculate conception.
Yeah, basically they make a clone of themselves, so they go from that way. So they're thinking that's also a possibility, but there's several pups waiting to be delivered. So and the reason why they think the sharks might have been doing that is because typical mating behavior for the sharks is to, you know, nibble at the female, and the ray was showing some signs of being gnawed on by the sharks. So there you go.
Well, that opens some interesting ideas.
We're going to have a shark ray, or is that...
what are you doing?
Or is it a sting shark?
What are you doing, honey? I'm nibbling on you.
It's my new mating.
Let us go to the great state of Florida. Two suspects took the fast track to jail in Orange County, Florida. Literally. Where is Orange? That's West Palm Beach. They were clocked on the Florida Turnpike What's the worst ticket you ever got? How fast was the worst ticket you ever got?
A parking ticket.
You got to be kidding me.
I've never had a speeding ticket, no. I've been pulled over twice for speeding, and they let me go both times.
I got pulled over in Oregon in 1985 on I-84. This guy pulls me over, and it's Oregon, but he's like right out of Alabama. He walks up to my window, rolling down. He's like, you know, license, registration, please. He says, I've been pacing you for about 5 miles, and you weren't doing anywhere near 55. And I can see you're in a hurry, so I'm just going to write you a ticket and get you on your way. And in the box, it says 90 plus and a 55.
Oh.
So my worst
pullover for that, and I know you're going to tell your story in just a second, but it's just so we're clear. It was 2 a.m. I had just worked a 12-hour day at the local grocery store in their server room because we were doing major updates. I was tired, and I was out on a country road going about 85 when a sheriff pulls me over and says, what's going on? What are you hurrying? I said, I'm sorry, officer. I just got off of a long shift, and I'm just tired. I'm trying to get home. And he said, you're lucky I'm not CHP because I'd write you a ticket.
Yep.
Go ahead and take care. Just be safe and get home.
Yeah. CHP would not have allowed that.
No, they would have just given me one.
Anyway, I never paid that ticket.
You didn't? Are you a felon?
So I got this letter one day from the state of Oregon saying you have a court date on this date, but I couldn't make the court date because I was going to be at sea. So I called them up and said, well, I'm going to be at sea. I need a, what happened? And she said, very politely, so we have a reciprocal agreement with the state of Washington. If you don't pay the ticket, the fine, which wasn't that bad. It was only like $400 for 90 plus and a 55.
Okay. But this was the 1980s, back when,
folks. This was 1985.
This is back when dollar bills were backed by gold.
So she says, the state of Washington will not renew your driver's license until you pay this fine. So that's it. That's the whole, if I don't pay it, that's what you're going to have. That's what's going to happen. She says, yes, sir, but that's very serious. You won't have a driver's license. And I said, you do realize I'm in the military?
Mm-hmm.
She says, yes, sir. I said, you do realize that in Washington State, a driver's license, as long as I'm in the military, never expires. So theoretically, since I've been in the Navy at this point for 5 years, it could be 15 years before my driver's license expired.
Mm-hmm.
She said, yes, sir, we realize that. I said, you're not going to do anything. You're not going to issue a warrant. You're not going to give me, you're just not going to renew my license. And she said, yes, sir, that's all. I said, okay, thanks, bye. And I didn't go back to Oregon until like 2009. The whole way I'm driving through Oregon, I'm like, And then when I got my new Washington license after we moved back up here, I was a little nervous because it was literally the same number. The only driver's license number I ever memorized, and it was the same one.
They wrote off the loss.
Yes. So there you go. Anyway, these guys in Florida were clocked doing 199 miles an hour on the Florida Turnpike.
Holy crap.
Social media posts, the sheriff's office explained to the deputies that clocked the pair doing 199, but did not say how the authorities eventually caught them. But they did arrest them.
Buzz Lightyear to the rescue.
They did arrest them and sent them to jail, where they're in jail for doing 199 miles an hour on the Florida Turnpike.
Well, you're not going to spike strip that because that's dangerous at that point.
Right.
Right. So the best you could do is get a copy of the license plates, I guess, and try and find the people. But was the car stolen?
I don't know. One of the commenters says, I bet they weren't in a stolen Kia.
Or a Pinto.
But anyway, I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. One of them is, if you got a car that can do 199 miles an hour on the Florida Turnpike, that almost deserves applause.
Almost.
But until I know how they caught them, because I suspect it's they did something stupid, but it doesn't say they had an accident, so I don't know. I bet they ran out of gas.
Maybe. I mean...
Anyway, it's the kind of thing that makes me say,
WTF?
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Dave.
I am Friar Rod.
And of course, today is a very important day. Today is the Superb Owl.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm trying to think of a Superb Owl day that I have actually cared less about. I have no particular involvement in this one whatsoever.
Well, you know, I'm rooting for the Niners just because they're California team, but also I kind of like the young quarterback and would like to see him succeed. And that, and I hate Kansas City.
Well, I hate Kansas City too. I'm a Bronco fan, so I'm with you on it. And see, that's Pat Bowlen's 11th commandment. You never, ever wish anybody else in the AFC West success at all, period. You never do that. I don't know if I agree with that or not, because see, I'm an old AFL guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so my rule of thumb in Super Bowls, sorry, didn't say that, Superb Owls, is that I always, if I have no rooting interest, in other words, the Broncos or the Giants aren't in it, then I always pull for the AFL team, whichever team that is. It goes back a long way. Some of you aren't old enough to understand why that matters. I was raised in the era of the AFL, which was a separate league from the NFL and highly competitive. And so Kansas City would fall into that, that ground. But what a lot of people don't realize is that San Francisco, the 49ers, are not an original NFL team either.
Mm-hmm.
They belonged to something called the AAFC, the All-American Football Conference,
mm-hmm.
which in the 1940s was pretty successful, but they had a problem, and their problem was the Cleveland Browns, which were also an AAFC team. And the problem that the AAFC had was that Cleveland was so much better than everybody else that they won all four titles.
Hmm.
And the NFL used to harass the AAFC saying, see, you're just not up there. You're not good enough. You're not good.
Mm-hmm.
But when the AAFC decided to fold, the NFL took three of their teams, the San Francisco 49ers, the Cleveland Browns, and a team called the Baltimore Colts, which moved to Dallas and became the Dallas Texans, which then folded and moved to Miami. Or no, they moved from Miami. Somehow or another, they ended up back in Baltimore as the new Colts.
Okay.
It's a long, convoluted story. But the two teams that came over, the Cleveland Browns and San Francisco 49ers, and the Cleveland Browns were just so much better than everybody else. And the NFL was giving them a bunch of crap about, you're not good enough over here. You guys will never come. And the Browns went out and won the NFL championship. So anyway, so the 49ers also are not an NFL team in the strictest of senses. Now, the NFL considers its history to date basically from 1960,
mm-hmm.
and the modern NFL 1970 with the merger. So that's how they look at it. They look at teams prior to that as permanent. I do not. I see the 49ers as not an NFL team, and I like a Super Bowl, Superb Owl, that doesn't have NFL teams in it,
okay.
which I would consider this to be. I do like Brock Purdy. I wouldn't say I like the 49ers, but I've never hated them.
Yeah.
And Steve Young was one of my heroes.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that era of the 49ers, Ricky Waters, Steve Young, loved that team. And I really like this Brock Purdy guy. And I'm so tired of the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm so tired of them. I really am. And here's the kicker. If the Chiefs win this today, they will have four Super Bowl titles. And you know what that means to the Denver Broncos and Las Vegas, Oakland, whatever the hell you are, this week, Raiders, each of whom only have three.
Yeah.
And you know we're never going to hear the end of this.
Never. Especially because they won it in the Raiders stadium.
Right. So, on that basis, I guess for this year's Superb Owl, and by the time most of you hear this, it will be long over.
Mm-hmm.
At least the pregame shows, anyway. I guess I'm kind of sort of leaning into the Niners.
Yeah.
But I literally don't care. I'm literally at the point where I'm like, if I had something better to do today, I don't know, maybe a midterm exam, I would do that. I don't, but if I did, it's probably what I would do.
I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go. I have to clean out the smoker today and smoke some tri-tip. And
oh, man. What time should I come over?
Oh, this afternoon? Well, it should be right around 6 p.m.
At 199 miles an hour, I could make
it. You could?
Question is, could I get it through Oregon without getting arrested another time?
The question is, well, not only arrested, but would you get another ticket?
And on that note, I'm Rabbi Dave.
And I am Friar Rod.
And this has been...
What the Frock?